This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Oral. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lynch's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the prospect. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck was
that? Bismarck.
Bismarck. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck, yeah. He dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation. Let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Tuesday evening, a rare Tuesday taping here of the Place to Be Podcast, but that is because we have a very special guest. It's going to be a great episode, one we've been looking forward to now for a few weeks since we were able to lock this down. So let me go ahead and bring in my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Happy New Year to you. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 353 of the Place to Be Podcast. And the week started off pretty hot, JR. Monday, of course, you had on the Kevin and Kelly show. The other JR. Well, that was like a weird symmetry, huh?
It was a weird symmetry. two great all-star JRs on one night. But
that's right.
Yes, we had Jim Ross was on the Kevin Kelly show. If you didn't catch that, Monday night that went up. It was a great interview. I mean, he blew right through Kevin's go-home signal. It was awesome. And we went about an hour with JR. He talked all about Global Force and everything he's got going on. Told some old stories, some tips for being a commentator if you want to get into the business, all kinds of cool stuff. It was a really good chat with two guys that are friends and know each other for a while. So it was very, very friendly chat, a really good chat. So definitely check that out if you get a chance. And then tonight, to kind of finish off the symmetry of the Global Force New Japan Wrestle Kingdom duo, we have Jeff Jarrett on with us, of course.
Unbelievable.
He's been up and down the road a while, and he's gracious enough to spend some time with us here tonight. We're going to talk about, like I said, Wrestle Kingdom, New Japan, Global Force, and hopefully get a couple of other stories out of him as well if we get some time. So stick with us through that, and then at the end of the show, we're going to announce our next interview, which is actually going to we're going to record it next week, and it should be out next week, too. Really just wanted to take a minute, though. Let's talk about PlaceToBeNation.com, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Your new episode of The Extra Point went up today. It was a great episode. You and Dr. G broke down week 17, kind of previewed the playoffs, introduced us to some brand new awesome websites.
Yeah, fantastic. next week, a multi-part series on the history of CompuServe.
Very good, very good. You can talk to Lex Luger and Sting on CompuServe.
Yes!
you took some reader emails, too. It was a good episode. Yeah, as we mentioned, Kevin had Jim Ross on. Check that out. Another installment of the PTBN series rewatch for Seinfeld. We're into season 4, episode 5, The Wallet, and we have The Watch coming up on Friday, so check that out. A great piece. Of course, we've been doing some 1994 retrospectives, being the 20-year anniversary. Glenn Butler said to cherish every moment because they'll never come again, looking at the greatness of Star Trek in 1994, a franchise at a crossroads, and kind of went very in-depth there. If you're a big Star Trek fan, this is a must-read by a Star Trek, very knowledgeable Star Trek fan, Glenn Butler. So if you're a fan of the franchise and the series and the TV shows and everything else that goes with it, be sure to check that out. my favorite basketball podcast in the world, the NBA team.
Yes.
The None and Dunners Part 2. This time looking at the One and Dunners. Andrew Reach and Adam Murray talked about all the players that had 1 year in college and then went pro, from the successful ones to the cautionary tales and everyone in between. So that was a really good chat. Those guys have some good chemistry. And Scott, of course, the mothership going down here is the greatest song of the 90s tournament. We are into the second round. Started with 640 songs, cut it down to 320 for round two, and now we have pools of 10 up. Two a day, you pick 4 out of 10 songs to advance, and we're going to cut it down to 128 from there, and then have a tournament, usual bracketed tournament from there. So a lot of fun. That's brought up a lot of good discussion, some nice memories as well. Speaking of throwbacks, Andrew Reich and Maurice Pogue looked back at NBA Jam. Remember that game from the 90s?
Oh, yeah.
20 years since that game was really at its zenith in 1994.
Zenith, right?
Adam Murray looked at the top music videos of 2014. Now, speaking of 94, that's something you would expect to read from there, but apparently the music videos are still a thing, and Adam breaks down the top ones from the year. And everything else we have, tons of great podcasts for you up and down the board. We have the Kevin Kelly Show every other week. PTBN Main Event is a great roundtable show with you and a rotating host of panelists. And you guys all talk about modern wrestling, WWE, Ring of Honor, TNA, everything else going on in the world, news and notes. So that's every other week as well. Plenty of archives there. The full archive of the Steve Corino Show is housed at PlacementNation.com. Titans of Wrestling, looking at early 80s WWWF, where the big boys play. They look at every NWA WCW Supercard. That's Chad Campbell and Parv. Stephen Graham's Pro Wrestling Super Show, kind of like the PWI Hodgepodge podcast. They have all different kind of wrestling topics, whether it's debates about who is better, or they're looking at ECW pay-per-views, all different things. Top lists. The Kings of Sport with our buddy Nate Milton. You may have heard him from Review and Impact and The Law with John Pollock and those guys. Nate has his show here, The Kings of Sports. It's a great show, a lot of laughs. And host to many other shows too, Wrestling Culture, Wrestlenomics, the Still Real to Us podcast, all 22 weeks, Goodwill Wrestling, and those come and go throughout the weeks, on and off when we get them. But they're all housed, the full archive, placetobenation.com, placetobe.podbean.com has our full archive, which is also available on iTunes. And Scott, you and I do a lot of cool things on the show. We have a lot of great interviews. We have tons of interviews that we've had throughout the past. And also, of course, we have our Vintage Vault, where we started at WrestleMania 1. We've gone all the way through. We're at Armageddon 03 next week. So we've had quite a lot of these things over the last 4 years. We also do Listomanias. We do live watches where we have different roundtables on. We watch episodes of old Nitro and Raw, Saturday Night's Main Event. We do those for you. Some interviews we've had in the past, if you want to check them out. Of course, we are pretty well known for our Kevin Kelly retrospectives, where Kevin would come on with us throughout the years of our Vintage Vaults and give us kind of a lot of what was going on backstage at the time. He did that for 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, all the way through 2003, early 03 when he was with the company. So those are must listens if you haven't heard them before. He gives all the backstage dirt, what was going on, the decisions, behind the scenes stories from all those years, the Attitude Era. So a lot of fun there. We've also interviewed Carino, J.J. Dillon, a two-part episode, Christopher Daniels, Gary Michael Capetta, Scott Hudson, Harvey Whippleman, Downtown Bruno, Stevie Richards, Eddie Edwards, John Walters, Christopher Robin Zimmerman, and Scott Keith, a couple of internet legends there, writers. So tons of interviews for you. As I said, you can find us on iTunes, The Place to Be Podcast, if you search that. Also on Stitcher Radio 2, you can find us there. So, Scott, why don't we not waste any more time? And now that we've told you about PlacementNation.com, I think it's time to bring in our very special guest. And that very special guest is with us right now, the one and only, of course. He's been around the wrestling business forever and a day, started back in the territories, had a great run with the World Wrestling Federation, as well as WCW and the TNA, and now with Global Force Wrestling. And we are very honored to have the one and only Jeff Jarrett with us here tonight. Double J, how are you?
Forever and a day? Wow. that really, way to kick off. Okay, dig me up. Me and Moses are best friends, but that's okay. No, I appreciate you guys having me on. Looking forward to talking wrestling and Global Force, and more specifically, Wrestle Kingdom 9. And I appreciate you having me on tonight.
Oh, yeah. We are very excited. And, of course, meant that with the utmost respect. The guy that's been around the business knows his stuff. So so why don't we start talking about Global Force? We'll kick things off here with that, because I know a lot of our listeners are very, very excited. Many of our fans are going to order Wrestle Kingdom. So they wanted to hear you talk all about it tonight. So how did the concept for GFW come about? Was it your idea? Were you approached? And what are the short-term and long-term goals of your project?
Well, are you talking about the New Japan relationship or much a more broader sense, Global Force Wrestling?
Let's go broader sense with Global Force first, and then we'll get into New Japan.
Yeah, Global Force is something that it's no secret that I walked away from a company I founded about a year ago this time. And I knew I wanted to close that chapter of my life and start new and start fresh and head down a road that that I was very excited about. And so I put the pieces together, maybe January, February, March. And then as I, you know, obviously April 7th, 2014 is when I announced the name of the company, the day after WrestleMania. And then I knew that I wanted to create brand awareness and I wanted to do things differently. I wanted to do things fresh and innovative. And so methodically I've rolled out the partnerships, or we've rolled out the partnerships from AAA in Mexico in April, and then went into June with New Japan Pro Wrestling, and then we went. You know, it was in July that the top independent promotions throughout Europe, and then South Africa in August, and late August, early April, we rolled out Australia, and so we rolled out an alliance of connections and promotions, and want to connect fan bases. And that's part of the vision that we have at Global Force Wrestling. And we're very excited about connecting fan bases from around the world, because my family's been in the business over 70 years. My grandmother got in the business. She never wrestled, but she promoted and did it just about every other job. And then my dad wrestled and promoted. So we've got a lineage, and I've been blessed to have been born in this business. And, you know, I can remember the magazine days when guys, specifically myself, would say, hey, what's the wrestling going on in New York or California or Oregon with Don Owen or Fritz Von Erich and all that. And then you move into the tape trading days and what's going on here and there and what's going on in Japan. And then as we roll along to 2015, all these fan bases in one shape, form, or fashion are connected on some level. And I want Global Force to be a part of that connectivity.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, too, because and that's I'm glad to hear that, because I feel like we've come maybe as far as we can go with the current model. I feel like WWE is where they're going to get to, and TNA is where they're going to get to, and Ring of Honor. And I like that this is kind of out of the box, and it's almost such a reboot to the old, like you said, kind of territory feel. Just everyone loosely working together, the one banner, the promotion, but everyone kind of doing their own thing. They have their own set of wrestlers that they will share on occasion. And I think that feel is what has been missing for quite a while. And I think that that's great to be different, because everything you hear is that all these promotions could maybe challenge WWE, but they're all kind of similar. So it's great to hear like a unique, different kind of take on it.
Well, I agree. And when, again, I go back to my lineage and knowing what I know through the history of the business, you know, it used to be magazines and tapes and this and that. Now I'm a father of five, and when my kids can watch a wrestling match from AAA, Triple Mania specifically, and then watch the finals of the G1 Climax finals from New Japan, and then watch WXW or Rev Pro, just all the different promotions, WWP out of South Africa. When you have accessibility to all these different type promotions, we'll call them the millennials, the cut quarters, or whatever you want to call them. The fan base is so connected in that I wanted to really to bring that to the forefront, that wrestling fans, in essence, they know so much now that I wanted to be sort of a part of that. Global Force Wrestling needs to be a part of connecting fan bases.
Now, obviously, Double J, your family's been in the business, again, as you said, seven decades, and in particular, your experience from TNA last 11 years. What will you do the same, and what will you do differently here as compared to when you started and grew TNA from the beginning?
I don't really want to specifically hone in on just the TNA years, because we're all the sum total of all of our parts, and you know, my entire history dating back. You know, I've been actively wrestling 28 years. So I just really don't want to focus on the last 11 or 12 years. But when you look at certain aspects, not just in wrestling, but really in any form of entertainment or sporting event, in that at Global Force, I really took a step back last January, February, March, and sort of analyzed things and researched things and read a lot of things and got a lot of wise counsel from other different forms of entertainment. I'm from Nashville. Obviously, the music business is enormous here, but other forms of entertainment as well. And when you look at brand awareness, that really sits on top of everything. When you look at the WWE, they probably got whatever number you want to pick, 75, 85, 95% market share. And it's about their brand. Obviously, John Cena sits on top of their brand, but it's all about the WWE. It's all about, and I can remember my days at the WWF, that you know Vince would very proudly tell you, either in a very stern manner or a very jovial manner, if it's good for the brand, if it's good for WWF, it's good for all of us. And that it really speaks volumes. And so when you take all that in, and I took a step back and looked at the landscape and what I felt was a really, really deep free agent pool, and you know, Lucha Underground with AAA coming to the United States, and Ring of Honor entering the pay-per-view market with their syndication deal. And when you look at different things, I knew that I wanted to create an enormous brand awareness. And so that's sort of been my charted course since April 7th of 2014, and I continue to do that. And a big part of that is launching this Sunday with an enormous splash with a dome show that's, you know, we're on pace to sell over 50,000 tickets and a card that is unparalleled, 10 matches of 4 hours of professional wrestling that Jim Ross is calling. It's really come together of a can't-miss event, and that's really what we want to continue to create at Global Force Wrestling.
Yeah, lots of hype around that show, like you said, very anticipated, and that is this weekend, Wrestle Kingdom 9. So while we're on it, Jeff, how did this partnership with New Japan come about? Do you foresee this being something going forward? Are you going to continue to bring shows from New Japan to the United States? And any other promotions you're looking to do similar? I know we went through the list of countries we're working with here over the last year that you've started to announce. Is this kind of a, let's see how this goes and we'll go from there? Or do you have other things in the works? And again, how did this whole New Japan partnership come
about? Well, all eyes are on this Sunday. It goes without saying that the business, any business, not just the wrestling, is predicated on the bottom line. So we're very focused on this Sunday. But we have other international promotions in the works. The New Japan relationship is a long-term relationship. We're very excited. It's no secret that Jeff Jarrett and New Japan go back many, many years. I've worked with them off and on through the years. I've got a tremendous amount of respect for their organization. You know, they've been around over 40 years. You know, Ricky Dozan, he's the Hulk Hogan of Japan wrestling, and Antonio Inoki was one of his students, and him and Baba went their separate ways, and Giant Baba founded All Japan Wrestling, and Antonio Inoki founded New Japan Pro Wrestling, and Inoki has just so many highlights. I mean, he's a household name as a politician today, but years ago, 20, 25, 30 years ago, he had a very famous match against a guy called Muhammad Ali in his prime, a boxing wrestling. So there's so many things that go into New Japan Pro Wrestling. It's a who's who. Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, Jimmy Snuka. I could go on and on and on about the international superstars that have appeared for New Japan. So a lot of respect for those guys, and we're excited to continue, Global Force is, about our international relationships coming into 2015.
And a stacked card this weekend, of course, for Wrestle Kingdom 9. The big main event, Tanahashi Okada for the IWGP Heavyweight title. Nakamura Ibushi, AJ Styles on the card, Doc Gallows and Karl Anderson, Jeff Jarrett in a six-man tag match.
What?
No. Looking forward to seeing you in action there. And I think the match is probably getting the most hype out there as a potential show stealer is, of course, the Junior Heavyweight Championship in the tag division for Red Dragon, Time Splitters, Young Bucks, and Forever Hooligans. And, of course, familiar with those guys from the Indies, from Ring of Honor. Scott, we witnessed a Red Dragon Forever Hooligans match here in Providence for Ring of Honor that was just phenomenal. So seeing these guys with great talent like the Time Splitters and the Young Bucks makes us really, I mean, that along with the main event and, of course, Jeff Wrestling as well, makes us a can't-miss show. So, Jeff, say someone who is not well-versed in New Japan, this to me, looking at it, is a card that would be one that they want to hear because you've got Jim Ross calling the action and Matt Stryker, two guys that are very good at getting that product across to you, introducing you to things you may be unfamiliar with, and with the level of talent on this card as well. To me, if you're looking for an alternative to what you have now, this is the card to do it with.
Without a doubt. And when you let's remove myself from that six man tag, because it's yeah. one of five matches that the Bullet Club's involved in. But when you look at my opponents, two thirds of the team, Kojima and Tenzin. Tenzin is a guy who is a future Hall of Famer. He's a legend in that country, a former IWGP heavyweight champion, tag champ, G1 Climax Finer, three-time winner. I mean, he truly is a legend, future Hall of Famer. That match has its own identity unto itself. But let's remove that. And when you sort of go top to bottom, the tag title with Gunn and Gallows and Machine Gunn is going to break a record for most consecutive Gaijin appearances on the Dome show. You look at AJ Styles in a singles match, and that's where he's always shined the brightest.
Oh, yeah.
He's facing a guy that is to me, it's his Japanese contemporary. That both of them have a lot to prove. Both of them are main eventers, and AJ had a great run being the champion this year, but mm-hmm. he didn't want to go out on this year with back-to-back losses on big shows. And Naito got a win over AJ earlier, and he's trying to break through to that Okada, Tanahashi, Nakamura level. And so there's a lot of pressure on that match. Kenny Omega, the newest member of the Bullet Club, incredible athletic ability, and he wants to make a statement. And then you circle, you know, right up to the main event where you should when you talk about Tanahashi Okada and Jim Ross, who has called the biggest and the best main events over the last 20-plus years, when he says that this could possibly be the best main event that he's ever called, takes in Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Undertaker, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, John Cena. There's a lot of water under that bridge.
And it's not hyperbole. I mean, it's true.
Yeah, right. No, and so this event has become, you know, the most widely distributed pay-per-view in history, and Ross and Stryker and the 10-match card, and it's 4 hours, and it's live in every time zone in the world. It's become the can't-miss event, and that's truly not hype. That's as a wrestling fan, and I've done multiple interviews and podcasts and digital media and print media and terrestrial radio. when I talk about all this, it is – I said it easy. The best thing – this event sells itself because as a wrestling fan, which I am, you really don't have an excuse on why you don't want to see this, and that's just not talk.
This news is incredible, and on top of the birth of Global Force Wrestling and the ability for Americans to see this show on Sunday, going into 2015, wrestling in general should be on cloud nine. Some fans are down. I mean, a lot of fans, very tunnel vision, WWE viewers only, and of course the product's kind of down at the moment. And a lot of people say because of that, the business is down, which obviously from what you're doing is completely wrong. Tell us why they're wrong that the business is down and why we should be excited about pro wrestling in general in 2015.
You know what? And it's all perspective and it's all relative. And I understand if you're a diehard WWE fan, that, you know, you want to play armchair quarterback and you're not happy and you're watching 3 hours on Monday and two on now soon to be Thursday. And you've got everything on you know, the WWE network, and you may not be satisfied, but if you would take a step back and really look at the wrestling business as a whole, that and I understand WWE is 75%, 85%, 90% market share. If you take a step back and really look at the entire industry, how can you not be excited? You have Lucha Underground with AAA and they're bursting on to the North American scene. You have New Japan, not just our event this Sunday, but they've got an Access deal and they're going to be bringing 13 one-hour shows. You've got Ring of Honor with their syndication deal, you know, and they have entered into the pay-per-view market, and they've got another one, I believe, coming up in March. You've got TNA, and good for those guys. They landed their deal with Destination America. You've got Global Force. You know, we're in the process of our rollout. And so all that being said, and take it one step deeper, and you look at the free agent market. You know, I've gone on record saying that indie wrestling or indie guys has sort of a negative connotation. I agree that there's independent promotions that hold their promotions monthly, quarterly, twice a year, whatever you want to call it. that's cool with me. But when you talk about the talent base, they're, to me, they're not indie wrestlers, because that's really a negative connotation. I call it a free agent market. And the free agent market, the talent pool of guys that, who have been on national and international stages and guys who haven't been there yet, it's very deep. There is a rosters in promotions and independent promotions that are very, very, I mean, very good. And that's what excites me as a wrestling fan, not just as a wrestling promoter, but as a wrestling fan, that there is so much diversity, so much talent, and so much vibe. I mean, the UK independent scene is red hot. The Australian independent scene is red hot. In South Africa, we just made an announcement last week about us co-promoting a show in South Africa at the Nelson Mandela Bay Stadium. So it's a very exciting time to be in the wrestling business.
So, Jeff, after all these years, right, very successful career, you could kick back and relax, and you keep churning, putting together this this promotion and a Global Force. What keeps you going? Tell us why. What brought you here to Global Force Wrestling?
Such an easy answer, passion. I love it. I do. I mean, we're all in this one crazy shape, form, or fashion together. You guys are here, you know, on a Tuesday night, the night before New Year's Eve, and we're talking wrestling, and I'm talking wrestling, and we've got a huge event this Sunday. But at the end of the day, I still am. I'm one of the I like to call myself the world's greatest wrestling fan, because I absolutely love the business. But I love it from many facets: from being a wrestler, from being a fan, from being a businessman, from the television side, sponsorship side, all different facets of it. Because it's always fascinated me since I was a 7, 8, 9 year old kid. And that's why I love it. I absolutely am more excited about the professional wrestling business today than I was yesterday and the day before that.
So we're going to get to some questions in a bit about your favorite personal things. But now you're telling us you're the biggest wrestling fan. You're putting on one match in history that you're going to watch as a fan. What match are you choosing?
Wow, that's on the spot. One match that you got to put on TV? That's almost impossible to answer.
So you're kicking back with a Coke and some popcorn, and you're going to watch one match you get to choose before you go to bed tonight.
In history or in the future?
Let's do both. What match you'd like to see, and what match in the past is your favorite to throw on when you're bored?
I mean, it goes without saying, I love a hard-hitting, and I've said this about this Sunday, Tanahashi Okada. You can relate that to any great rivalry that you loved growing up, or not just growing up. If you're a professional wrestling fan and you have a great rivalry and a really have a favorite of that, you can equate that to Tanahashi Okada this Sunday. But, you know, you want to go back, and Shawn Michaels is just an incredible athlete in the rivalries that he's had over the years. That you know, you can't leave him out of the conversation. You can't leave Kurt Angle out of the conversation. You know, you can't leave Jerry Lawler, and I grew up on him. And you know, a lot of people know Jerry Lawler as the funny color commentator, but when you go back to his, you know, roots and the history of his in-ring, of being an in-ring performer, on some facets of Jerry's career, I don't think he has a peer. And his track record speaks for itself in Memphis. And then, you know, you can go on and on. You can talk about Inoki. You can talk about certain performers around the globe. You can talk about different performers out of Mexico, out of Puerto Rico. So, you know, one match in the past is it's damn near impossible. You would have to really ask me, all right, what, let's get more specific. And in the future, I'll say this, I want a Global Force Wrestling main event match is what I cannot wait to promote on a global scale. A really, really heated rivalry on a global scale for the Global Force title.
All right. We've talked about a few of the contemporaries you've worked with in the past and in the present. We're going to do a little name association. We're going to throw a guy at you and just give us a few words about him, his career, as a person, however you want to steer it. But we're just going to throw some names at you.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
All right. The first one is one you've mentioned, we've talked about already, but AJ Styles.
It's too easy for me to say phenomenal. A great great father, great family man, And when it becomes game day, he rises to another level. He really, really, and his track record, again, speaks for itself. When it's game day, big event day, and this Sunday will prove it. His game will be taken to another level.
How about Raven?
Very unique, dynamic, controversial personality that back in the asylum days, I'm pretty sure me and him hold the record. We turned more people away than we can get in the building that night that we had our final showdown.
That was the first of the TNA shows I ordered because I'd read so much about that feud and we wanted to see the big payoff for the title match. And that was one of my first real introductions to that. And the stuff with Raven, I've gone back and watched now. It was really, really good in 2003.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, I actually have your four-disc King of the Mountain set, which is fantastic, and I believe that match is on there, and I've watched it a couple of times. Tremendous.
Cool.
Jeff Hardy.
Oh, man. This is a too easy but charismatic enigma, but Jeff Hardy, you can really not say words to describe his ability to connect with an audience. I can remember, you want to talk about Asylum Days, when he stepped out the first time he appeared for TNA. When I tell you, legitimately, the roof came off. It almost did. The place went off the charts. And then throughout his TNA career, I like to say some of my favorite matches with that guy. I know him on a very personal level, his family, Beth, and we vacationed together. But as a performer, the enigma, you just can't really have words to describe him. But as a dude and a buddy of mine, he's the best of the best.
How about another guy, a little bit in the news because he was shockingly referred to as retired last night without ever having made much of an announcement. That's Christian.
I heard about that, and that caught me by surprise. And he'll, you know, he's always been such an underrated performer. When he came to TNA and you know, I don't even want to say step up his game because his game was always up there. But the guy can flat out go. And I can remember when he first entered into the WWF and me and Owen and Edge and Christian had a series of matches. Both of those guys were so super talented. And his career speaks for itself.
How about Sting?
We go back, since before I got in the business, 1985, Thanksgiving, I believe, 84, 85. I would have to do the recollection. I can remember sitting up in my room and Warrior and Sting drove up to my father's house or our house and knocked on the door, and they had driven across country from California. And so that's how far back our relationship goes. And then, you know, he had his incredible career and run at WCW, and then we brought him on board at TNA, and how loyal and how much he really sunk his teeth into the promotion. I got a ton of respect for that guy, and for him to get the opportunity at this stage of his career to step onto that WWE stage, and it looks like step onto the WrestleMania stage in his home state, I couldn't be happier for him.
Since you mentioned, I mean, you don't have to go too much into it if you don't want to, but how about your relationship with Owen Hart? Any kind of fun Owen story you could tell from your time together?
Well, you know what? And I've asked that numerous times over the last couple of weeks that, you know, I like, obviously everybody's got an Owen Hart. If you knew him, funny story, rib story and all that, and that's great. And I'll let the guys tell that story, until they want to. But, you know, I feel that, what's in my gut is I want people to really remember every chance I get the opportunity to say this, what a man's man he was, what a guy, what a great father, what a great husband, brother, uncle, cousin, whatever you want to call Owen, but really a human being that had integrity in a business that at times there's not a lot of integrity that goes around. And Owen is a man's man, was a man's man, and his legacy will live on for that, equally as is what he did in the ring as out of the ring.
Was that one of your favorite times with WWF? Was the team of that one? Because it seemed like you guys were having a ton of fun out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a no-brainer. Who's my favorite tag partner? It was Owen, because we're both sons of promoters. We sort of had that kinship. We I definitely don't have the funny personality, but you know, we could relate to one another. He always made me laugh. It was such a joy to travel with him, and he would entertain everyone. But you know, on another level, we understood each other. Again, going back to, we're both sons of promoters, and looked at the business probably, you know, different than most other wrestlers, just because our families had made a living. You know, I said it before, the wrestling business has put groceries on our table, the Jarrett family, for 70 years. So, you know, the Hart family for many, many years. So when you have that experience, you do look at this business different. And we have a deep respect, and both of us did, for the wrestling fan, and understand that without the fan, and this isn't a promo line or whatever you want to call it, it's the truth. When you understand that, it gives you a different perspective on this business.
How about another mainstay from your time in TNA, and that's Samoa Joe?
The Samoan submission machine. His athleticism and that time when he hit the scene at TNA and the momentum got, that was how can I personally and professionally, but I personally not look back on Samoa Joe's time as he entered TNA with nothing but fond memories, because the machine started rolling and the headbutt heard around the world when Kurt and him locked horns, and just the electricity and the impact zone that night. It was electric, and you know, we're talking about it to this day, and fans will ask me about that to this day. It definitely was a special time in TNA.
All right, here's a guy that might be, in my time watching TNA, maybe my favorite performer that's ever worked there, and that's Bobby Roode.
He's, you know, to this day, We've been friends since the day he entered. I said this story the other day. I could remember him in the back of the asylum, and he got out of the ring, and I'm scratching my head, and I think I went over to Scott D'Amore, but I know I went to Bobby, and I'm like, now, can you tell me why you're not signed with WWE? Because I knew he was there for a cup of coffee. I wasn't real sure, but that was however many years ago, 10, 11 years ago, and now to see him today, and the professional he's become, how he carries himself in and out of the ring, and the performer he is, in my opinion, he doesn't get the credit he deserves and hasn't for quite some time.
Speaking of a guy that doesn't get the credit, at least didn't for a long time, and not from fans, but from the promotion that made him and that he helped make, and that's Randy Savage, finally kind of coming back into the WWE spotlight, rumored to go in the Hall of Fame. Obviously, you worked with Randy and WWF, WCW, and then the TNA as well. Any memories of Savage? And are you happy that he's finally kind of getting the recognition he deserves on the main stage to a whole new group of fans?
Well, the Savage / Paco family and the Jarrett family go back to the early 80s.
Right, yes, Memphis, obviously.
It's such a storied, my earliest, fondest memories of the Macho Man and wrestling Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee, and the tension between the Poffo promotion and the, you know, fans would know it as the USWA promotion, USWA promotion. It was very tense to say stressful times would be an understatement, but to see that come and then the Macho Man come into the Memphis territory, or my dad's, however you want to remember it as, and then for him to have that series of matches with Lawler that did record-setting business for months and months and months, and then to see him, you know, go from a main event at the Mid-South Coliseum in Memphis to Madison Square Garden and back-to-back main events, 4 and 5 at Mania, and then to go on and have that career. And then I joined WWF in 93. There's a long, long history. And the Poffo family and Randy specifically, they knew the wrestling business, when I tell you, inside and out, from all facets, and had such a tremendous respect for it. That's how I remember Savage, and what a, there's only one Macho Man, Randy Savage, only one, there will only ever be one.
I wish, hopefully at some point we get some of the more of that footage to come out. It was a little bit on that Blu-ray, but that feud with, Mid-South and the Poffo promotion, it's like one of those forgotten, sometimes, incredible feuds during the territory years. Another guy that, also one of my favorites and a guy that I was that I gravitated to when I first watched TNA, and that's Cowboy James Storm.
And are you asking me my thoughts on James?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, James from day one or before day one in his career. And he came up through the TNA ranks and America's Most Wanted and then the Cowboy James Storm. And James is a guy that, that knows what he's doing. Again, you know, he hadn't always had control of his career and some things up and down over the ups and downs over the last 4 or 5 years. But James, you know, you go to a 3 or 4 years ago, you go to a TNA live event, you listen to the crowd reaction. The TNA fan base loved James in a big way, and it's because of his hard work.
All right, so one question I wanted to ask you about, too, during the WWF run here. Jeff, 1998, you know, you come back in late 97, you start doing the NWA gimmick in 98, and as a, I mean, I was like a diehard WWF fan at the time, and I really liked the gimmick. I thought it was something unique and something cool with you and Cornette and Wyndham and the Rock and Roll Express and all that. And then it just ended. And the next week you're on the horse. So what happened in those couple weeks to end what was, I thought, a pretty cool angle? Did you not like it? Was it something that they just decided to go away from?
If I could recall that, I would. But to my best recollection, the powers that be shifted gears. And that's obviously not a specific reflection on any of the members. It happens all the time,
right,
and will continue to happen all the time. But I do remember the quick transition, and I don't remember the specifics.
Okay. At the time, I liked it. You had some awesome theme music at the time with that.
There you go. And Dennis Carluzza, I can remember.
Yes.
It wasn't long ago that somebody tweeted a, I guess maybe it was a YouTube video, I remember Cornette and all that, and then all of a sudden I'm like, well, there's Dennis. I that had lost my memory there, but for a brief minute.
Well, it was cool too, as they got Wyndham out of the blackjack stuff and got him kind of back to his blonde hair and the one little last run with the NWA stuff with you and him. It was a lot of fun. It was a cool few months.
Appreciate it.
It's a cool looking belt too. speaking of WWE, do you ever see yourself associating any business wise or whatever with WWE or Vince again, or has that ship sailed? What do you think?
I'll steal a line from them. You never say never, but I don't like to have discussions about hypothetical situations. What ifs, this and that, and all that. I'll cross that bridge if it happens when I get there. I'm certainly not going to lose sleep or focus on it, or you know, that's out of my control. That's obviously a 1,000% Vince McMahon decision, and I'll leave it at that.
All right, so let's head back in time again. Let's do some memories now of things that you've been a part of, matches and feuds. So what is your all-time favorite feud that you took part in?
I've definitely been asked this multiple times, and it's so hard. Like I said, 28-year career at this stage, and for me to name one match. But you know, early in my career, me and Jerry Lawler had a feud against two guys called the Moondogs.
Yep.
And it was truly hardcore, really, before it was called hardcore. And it was very physical when I was a young kid and getting in there and getting the hell beat out of me by some old timers. And that was a unique time. But I can remember, and I finally remember just the intensity and, you know, quite frankly, the paychecks went up, which is a good thing as a young kid. And then I transitioned, you know, obviously in my early in career, I had some single matches against Curt Hennig and Nick Bockwinkel that I remember, and just knowing that, wow, I just went 35 minutes with this guy. And, you know, those were some of my first real teeth cutting main event matches. And then you segue into when I went to the WWF, a series of matches against Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, Shawn Michaels. Mm-hmm. We had a series of tag matches where me and Sean and the Road Dogg came on the scene versus Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. That, you know, we had a couple of main events at Madison Square Garden. But I can remember, you know, many people on the card shaking our hand. It was really, really high intense, very physical tag matches. And then, you know, anytime you win a World Heavyweight Championship, it's a big moment. And so, you know, at WCW, when you win the big gold belt and on that platform, obviously that was a great thrill. And then just a couple of years ago, I had a couple of a series of matches over about 6 months against Kurt Angle. that in my opinion, I'm very proud of those matches. They were very physical, very grueling. Obviously, Karen was involved in those, but it was really a unique time in my career. So that's sort of a overview, but I'll leave it at that.
The Moondogs matches were cool because as a kid growing up, obviously wasn't in Memphis, didn't have a lot of access to that footage, but PWI and those magazines would really highlight that stuff heavily, and it was like this faraway kingdom to me with these wild matches with these, you know, four guys, Jerry Lawler, Jeff Jarrett, the Moondogs, and they really hyped them. And for me, that was my first awareness of you before you came, you know, with the gold tooth and the record, the WWF. But
interesting. No, that's interesting. But I mean, you know, I can remember trash cans and 1x6s and boards, and it was brutal. I mean, it really was some brutal, brutal action. And like I said, you know, in those days, you knew if you were resonating with the fan base, if the amount of people that came to watch you wrestle on a nightly basis, 7 nights a week, and when the Moondogs and Jeff Jarrett and Jerry Lawler hooked up, and that went on for months and months and months on a weekly basis. And when you see your paychecks get a couple zeros added, you go, okay, we're doing something right here.
All right. Was it R.P. Lee? What was the guy's name that was with you in those early vignettes in WWF? It was like your
Well, an old-time wrestling fan would know him as Robert Fuller, the legendary Fuller-Welch family that his grandfather, actually his grandfather and my grandmother and the promoter called Nick Goulas were all contemporaries.
Well, not Tennessee Lee.
And then he was later known on the WWF stage as Tennessee Lee.
Right. No, him I knew. I'm talking the guy in the old vignettes. Remember he was like some fat guy and he had like a polo shirt? He went with you to the Nashville Records?
Oh, boy. R.P., oh my gosh. Gossett. Ronnie Gossett.
There you go.
Yeah. Boy, you are really, God rest his soul, Ronnie P. What was he called on the vignettes?
It was RP something. I thought it was RP Lee.
It may be RP Lee in Tennessee Lee. Yeah. So yeah. RP Lee.
Yeah. Tennessee Lee I knew was Robert Fuller, but yeah, RP Lee. I'm telling you, Jeff, I was locked in those early 90s.
You were seriously dialed in.
Kind of sick, isn't it, Jeff?
You were seriously dialed into that character.
Yeah, you were. My cousin and I were so into it, and I remember I liked Bob Holly a lot, and he loved you. Like whenever we'd wrestle in the basement, or he was always Jeff Jarrett, and he was like the hugest Double J fan. He had the voice down and everything, so we were very into the character.
Can you spell my name?
Yeah, that's J E ha ha double F J A ha ha double R E double T. That's Jeff Jarrett.
Not bad.
You're waiting to do that for 30 years.
Oh God, 30. Come on, I was old.
Since you were a baby. No. What was your favorite city to wrestle in, Double J? I mean, you've been all over the world. Obviously, you know,
wow.
Memphis is one of your favorite hotbeds, of course. But any other great cities you enjoyed working in?
I mean, it goes without saying the Garden, New York City, and you know, to this day, you know, I'll go to New York City and you'll walk by a pizzeria and a guy's tossing pizza and hey, Double J, and it's not Jeff, it's not Jeff Jarrett, it's that quick. Hey, Double J, and so New York City, I've always, dating back to the Garden days, had that relationship, had the connection. But you know, I've also said that, you know, if I ever had to move out of the country, it'd be Australia. Sydney and Melbourne are great fan bases. London's another one. During my time at WWF, WWE, got to wrestle at Wembley and Royal Albert Hall and different venues all over that town. We used to tour Germany. But then, you know, of recent, over the last 6, 7, 8 years, Mexico City, that has a special place. There's a couple of venues in Mexico City that are special that although they don't really like me and Karen, they still hold a place near and dear to my heart. So, you know, those are sort of the top line ones. And it goes without saying, Memphis. Memphis and San Juan are the two cities early in my career that I really gravitated toward. San Juan, Puerto Rico, and had a lot of great matches there. And then obviously Memphis, Tennessee.
Jeff, I've always been a mark for arenas, like you said, Madison Square Garden and watching matches there. Tell me, for somebody who's been and wrestled at the Mid-South Coliseum, what it was like there in its heyday. I've watched matches there, but you know, I've always wanted to talk to someone about what it felt like on those. What was it? Monday nights, right? Was the big night.
Monday nights, and I will, unfortunately, I did not get to wrestle. You know, I started in 1986, and that was right on the end of the heyday. Mm-hmm. But from about, and you know, some people think 82 to 84, but really about 79 to about 84, it was a real special place, and people really can't comprehend. And it happened all over the country, Charlotte, Tampa, Dallas, different arenas. But in Memphis, they averaged anywhere from 8 to 10,000 fans every Monday night. So when you really think about every Monday night, 8 to 10,000 fans. And the unique thing about Memphis was the show started at 8 o'clock. And at about 8 o'clock, it would be, you know, the place held 10,800 for a sold-out crowd. And my dad and Al Green and Jerry Lawler, there was a group of guys that sold that place out. I think they had a record of 46 out of 52 weeks. They sold it out late 70s, early 80s. Just an incredible box office. Elvis Presley, yes, the Elvis Presley, the king, would sneak in the back door. They would have him snuck in the back door, and he could watch the matches. But there was something about that Memphis crowd that they wouldn't actually get there on time. They would, you know, about half the crowd would get there for the opening match, and then they would start coming in. And then about the time Memphis, you know, had anywhere from 5 to 6 to 7 matches. But, you know, when it got to the semi-main event time and the lights went down and the spotlights came up, and then when you got around 82 when they really incorporated some ring music and entrance music, that place, and I watched it as a high school kid. You talk about making the hair on your neck stand up. You know, on their entrances, and back in those days, Lawler on the big matches, he would be lowered in from the ceiling. And Bill Dundee one time infamously drove his motorcycle in and wrecked. But no, I mean, when you have those different entrances, and we're talking about 82, 83, 84, it was really an electric atmosphere. And then you have the Lawler Dundee or the Lawler World title matches that would go quite some time in the drama. It was just a really, really cool place. It's hard to describe unless you were there, but if you want to put Madison Square Garden or the Forum or the Dallas Sportatorium in Memphis, that was it. It had that electric atmosphere.
So besides yourself, I'll take the easy ones out, besides yourself and your dad, who is your favorite promoter or booker to work for?
I mean, how can you not say Vince?
Yeah.
At the very top of that? You know, that's a good question. I hadn't been asked that on this round. But Vince is, without question, the greatest marketer, the greatest promoter of professional wrestling in the history of our business. His track record speaks for itself, and the vision the guy has. It goes without saying what that guy's accomplishments are. So that's at the top of the list. You know, before TNA, I had a run down in Puerto Rico, and Dutch Mantel, who later worked with me and for me in TNA, Dutch had a real keen sense of timing, that his track record of matchmaking probably goes unnoticed, but he had a real sense of timing that is really, really up there. And so I got a ton of respect for that guy. Because Dutch had he had an ear for the business that was uncanny.
All right. Give us one, if you can, give us really one good road story from your early Memphis days. One you can say, obviously, publicly, but one really good old school Memphis road story.
Guys, we're going to have to wrap this up because it's getting late. No. a Memphis road story? Oh, gosh. I don't know. I can remember. The one thing that we always had to do in this territory, Monday nights were Memphis, Tuesday Louisville, Wednesday Evansville, Thursday and Friday spot shows in Nashville, Saturday and Memphis TV on Saturday morning, you got to make the towns. And so I can remember driving in many a snowstorm. And it didn't happen often in this area because we're in the South. But when it did happen, you know, you couldn't put on the brakes and just say, oh, we can't go. So nobody in this area knew how to drive in the snow. They still don't. So, you know, making those towns and guys – pulling in truck stops and sleeping all night, and getting up and driving another 50 miles. And, you know, those kind of stories of making the town and being committed and really focusing on, I've got to make that show, is something that this area we prided ourselves on and making the show.
All right, Jeff, so before we wrap things up here, at the end of the day, what do you want Jeff Jarrett's legacy in the world of wrestling to be?
I'll let you guys write that. I don't want to write that. I know one thing. I've got a passion. I'm going to work as hard as I possibly can, sun up to sundown, every day. And that's why I'm doing Global Force today, that I am extremely excited. Obviously, we've touched on Sunday, extremely focused. And I want to be a part of presenting professional wrestling in a very innovative and engaging way. And that's really at the top of my list as it sits here today, as we close out 2014.
All right, and of course, New Japan Pro Wrestling's Wrestle Kingdom 9 this weekend from the Tokyo Dome in Japan. Tanahashi, Okada on top. That awesome tag match in there, plus a great other card of matches. All your favorites from New Japan, from, we won't even say indie circuit, like you said, Jeff, because these guys are a different class of wrestler that are going to be on New Japan. Jim Ross and Matt Stryker with the call. And, of course, brought to you here by Global Force Wrestling. Jeff, can you just give us the times? Because I know there's been... I've seen a lot of activity out on Twitter and on the blogosphere about where and when they can exactly find these shows. Because I know it's airing live overnight on a lot of cable carriers and again on Sunday. So do you want to give us the times?
It's very, very simple, and I've tried to simplify this. But 2 Eastern is live. So anywhere in the world, all 24 time zones, you take 2 o'clock Eastern, and then you extrapolate it out to whatever time zone you want.
Okay.
But it's 2 o'clock Eastern on January 4th. It's obviously 4 local, 4 p.m. local in Tokyo.
Yeah.
But 2 a.m., my bad, 2 a.m. Eastern is where you really want to focus on. And then the traditional pay-per-view time slot in North America that you're currently, you know, used to viewing is how I like to say it, the traditional pay-per-view time slot. And so you can go to globalforcewrestling.com. That's globalforcewrestling.com. Follow me on at Real Jeff Jarrett Twitter, or at GFW Wrestling on Twitter, and you can go to our website and get all the specific details to In Demand, Verizon, AT&T, UVerse, Direct, Dish, all through Canada, all your traditional pay-per-view providers, as well as the Flips app. But you can get all the information on our website.
Awesome. Jeff, we want to thank you so much. This is a ton of fun taking some time with you to talk about Wrestle Kingdom, to go down memory lane. And anytime you do these tours or you're looking for a venue, please come back to us. We'd love to have you on and chat some more. It's a ton of fun here. So we will be right back after this break, but that was Jeff Jarrett. Be sure to order Wrestle Kingdom 9 this weekend. Ain't he great?
Thanks, guys.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. Available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the big four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
All right, Nation, we are back. Hope you enjoyed that chat with Jeff Jarrett. I thought it was awesome, Scott. Jeff has a ton of energy, and I really hope he comes back with us. I loved, you know, we were just saying off air about he's a fan, and it comes through in his voice. And I love that when we have guys like that on that just like to talk about the business and their favorite stuff and classic matches and whatnot.
Well, at least we got a new open because now we'll have you actually doing his name. So
I bet you've been waiting for that since 1993. I was glad I got him to crack with the RP thing. See, he thought I was talking Tennessee Lee. He's probably like, this idiot doesn't know who Robert Fuller is. But I knew who Robert Fuller was. RP Lee. So on the line with us too is Dan McGinn. Dan was helping us produce this one recording behind the scenes. Dan, what did you think of Jeff? Did you enjoy it?
My gosh, I am hooked, line, and sinker for this. Like, if he's a salesman, I am already handing him my wallet right now. I'm already following him on Twitter. I'm buying the Bullet Club t-shirt. Like, I am just so ready for this. And, you know, I don't even care. 2 a.m., whatever. I might actually just stay up and watch his blog about it, what have you. No, but in all seriousness, this was as good of an interview, if not the best interview I think you guys have done in 300-plus shows.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, he was... You know, it's nice to be able to cultivate something like this, and we would definitely have him on as often as he wants to promote whatever he wants. I mean, I have a feeling this is going to be a huge success because he's doing something that's very hard to do, and that's to try to find a platform for a kind of a mysterious promotion like New Japan, because a lot of fans in the United States, you know, read it in the mags and that kind of thing. But now you've got a legitimate outlet to watch New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I think Jeff should be
applauded for that. So it's a big weekend for him. I'm happy for him.
Me too. A guy who works hard and cares, and that's what we like here. Guys that care. So, so Scott, that interview's behind us, and it seems like they always come in bunches for us. Like I feel like we don't do one for a while, and then also we get a flurry. So we had another one come our way. We want to give a shout out to our buddy, our fan out there that helped us out, bringing our next guest in, of course. And that interview will take place next week. It's not going to be as in-depth or as long as our other interviews because he is under some time constraints, but he is able to take just a little bit of time out of his schedule for us to join us next week. So, again, it'll be a little bit shorter. And, of course, it's Rob Kindler I wanted to say thank you to. I want to make sure I get his last name right. And he was the one that helped get us in touch with this guy. So we're going to record this one next week. I'm not sure when it's going to air. Probably late next week it'll be up. But we head back again to the Attitude Era, similar to Jeff Jarrett's time during his second run with the Dirty F. And that's because I guess we could check this off the PTB bucket list, Scott. A guy I think we've mentioned many times that we'd like to have on as a guest. And that is the world's most dangerous man, Ken Shamrock.
Yep.
We'll be joining us here on the Place to Be podcast. We'll talk some Attitude Era with Ken. We'll talk a little UFC. Maybe even a little CM Punk. We'll see.
Perhaps.
What comes up with Ken. So we're really looking forward to that. That'll be next week here on the Place to Be podcast. What are your thoughts there, Scott?
We're getting shammy. I mean, it's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome. And there's a guy kind of mysterious through the Attitude Era, and we've mentioned him often, obviously, during the Vintage Vaults, and it'll be nice to get his opinions on things.
Yeah, be very cool. What do you think, Dan? Mm.
Well, he's definitely a guy that you guys have been hyping for quite some time. It's really coming together, but he was a guy that you look back and he reached certain heights, and some people might think, oh, he didn't reach the heights he could have, but I mean, considering where he was and how he got started, I think it's a great story. I've heard him interviewed before. For the little bit of time that you guys will have with him, it'll be, you know, very good, very thought-provoking, because I think he has an awful lot to say.
I agree. Yeah, definitely.
Yep, should be a lot of fun. So Ken Shamrock here next week. Scott, we're here Tuesday next week. Not Monday, it'll be off Monday night. So Tuesday night we have Armageddon 03 back in the vault. And then Wednesday night we have a Nitro rewatch or a live watch. So that'll be fun as well. Back to that as well. So we're kind of normalizing a bit here into January. But we are going to have some scheduling changes coming in February that we'll get to. We'll talk about that in a couple weeks. Some new shows on the horizon too that should be really, really cool. So a lot of good stuff in the works here in 2015 for PlaceToBeNation.com. Thank you for all your support here. It's been a great, fantastic year in 2014. A lot of great episodes, a lot of fun, a lot of weirdness, a lot of craziness, Halloween and Christmas to be specific. A lot of new friends and fans that we've met, and we look forward to start kicking all off 2015 in Philadelphia. This was last year. Philadelphia for the Royal Rumble. We'll have a strong contingent there. So if you're new to the show and you're going to be in Philly and you want to join us or come say hi, you can send us an email, justinr@placetobenation.com. Hit us up at facebook.com/placetobenation, Twitter, place number 2B Nation as well. So for Dan McGinn and Scott Criscolo and the great Jeff Jarrett, I am Justin Rosero. We'll talk to you next week at Armageddon.
You could not wait to sing his name, could you?
No, never. RP Leap of Life. You can be on top for once. Wake up, who cares about little boys that talk too much? I've seen it all go down. The game of love was all in down. So come on, baby, come on over. Let me be the one to hurt. Make my life worthwhile. I can make you start to smile.